Hi, I'm Josh, and you know the only thing that's worse than something that's silent but deadly? Something that is dark, deadly, and dreadful. That will clear a fucking room.
Oh. Yeah, that's why you never trust a fart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you can sort of wake up like the 13-year-old dog that's laying in the corner, like, you know, just can't be bothered with anything, and all of a sudden that dog's like, I gotta go for a walk. Like, that's bad news.
I am Matt, and I feel like the Forsaken this week after telling one of my other co-hosts my opinion on one of the things we talk about this week and finding out they had the opposite reaction. It's like, but I thought we'd all have a love fest about it.
Forsaken. Forsoothen. Forsaken. Yeah.
Forsake?
Forsake. Yeah, okay, good.
Well, you guys live in Minnesota. Of course you do Forsaken. You do two pairs of socks. You keep your feet warm.
Yeah,
I also drink four sakes.
Then, either one is good.
It doesn't matter how many socks you're wearing.
It'll keep you warm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You just pour it on your feet. This is Charlie Dunn Austin. So it's nice to see some of the folks that we've got the films in for Twin Cities. You know, some people have been posting some things, and then of course you know people do the reviews and ratings on like Podbean and on iTunes, which is nice. But then it was weird that they were to have the one where it's so like, it took a direct quote from the movie, one of the movies this week, which is, yeah, the reviewer just said, yeah, it's trippy, bad. And I was like, man, be a little more articulate than that. Jeez.
Yeah. Give me something to chew on.
Thank you, Goldblum.
And we're rolling with the homies, and those homies are an army of CGI angels, because it's Harsho Hot Dog.
But so before we get going, though, I gotta say that I went and saw Slender Man. Me and like five other people did, and
like nationwide.
Me and five other people basically. And like, so here's the thing with this is that I'm gonna have to see it again. It wasn't any good, but I'm gonna need to see it again for one particular reason, which was I went to one of the like kind of B level theaters to see it because it wasn't in a ton of them, you know. And I don't know if the filmmakers intended for it to look like you're watching the movie through like kind of a poi fog, you know, but like I think it was because the projector bulb was about half dead, and so like the whole movie was kind of like you kind of lean forward like what's happening over there? And but I don't know if that would maybe it isn't, maybe that wasn't what they intended, but now I'm gonna have to see it again when it comes on DVD just to verify that, because I've been thinking about that since yesterday, and that's stupid because it was not a good movie, but it's like now I'm wondering if that was what they intended or not, and I'm not gonna ask them. So then you're going to have to go watch this stupid thing again.
Maybe it's a first-person movie shot from the perspective of a welder.
Ah, there you go.
Like somebody who just came from an eclipse.
It's just like, well, and the thing that what really gets me more than anything else with the movie was that like, it just, it like, you know, you take the Slender Man thing and then they're like, okay, we're going to make it so it's kind of like The Ring, but then he's completely limitless in the rules. But then there are specific rules, but then there's not some specific rules that they can't really seem to enforce the proper way. And then there's like, and then it just sort of stops. And it's just like, man. So I don't know. It wasn't any good.
I couldn't imagine that in 2018, a Slender Man movie would be anything but a kind of filmed equivalent of a shrug. So we were super excited about this idea, but what? 8 years ago, years ago, when this was a thing.
And when you say we.
We put this in production for,
Sony.
You know, in development hell forever, and now it's finally out. I don't mean we as in me. I mean, but from the perspective of the filmmaker.
We as humanity.
Right.
Like, even out of that number, it's an incredibly vanishingly small number of, like, middle schoolers that thought Slender Man was cool. And everybody else that is actually, like, you know, old enough to have rational thought looked at that and was like, that's a dumbass concept. And, like, was not impressed. And then that lasted for about, I don't know, 2 flambés worth of time. Like, yeah. And then it was just over and gone. Like, that shit disappeared in, like, 6 months from, like, the main cultural zeitgeist. It's still around. I know there's still stuff.
Like, it was already...
It is years too late for this to have happened. And even if they would have done it the year of... Still would have been a vanishingly small audience. They would have Scott Pilgrim themselves anyway.
It was like, already no passe way. When the girls stabbed the girl.
Well, in that documentary, by the way, I would recommend that documentary. The documentary is really good. I saw that at South by a couple years ago. It is really
going to be a hard watch.
It's tough, boy. It's a tough one. But I mean, I think it's worthwhile, especially if you have, you know, kids around. Like, I think it's worthwhile to watch for sure. But with the movie, it was just sort of like, I was talking to comment about it, and I was like, it was just one of the things. It was like, they had an opportunity to take this thing and give it real parameters and give it real rules, but
actual mythology.
But at its base level, its biggest problem is, like, you know, you watch Clash of the Titans, and you know, like, Medusa is just incredible. Like, every scene with that Medusa that they made is just amazing. And it's just sort of like, you know, like, oh, look at it, look at all these things. You see the stoner guys around, and it's amazing. And it's an effect for the audience, but it's like, man, it's incredible. So, like, this is basically the same concept, the way that they apply it, where it's like, you can't look at him. Otherwise, he's got you. But then later on, you can look at him, but then he doesn't got you necessarily. And you could get away from him, but then you'll be kind of jacked up psychologically. And it's just sort of like, but you're missing the opportunity here to, like, you give the audience a thing that the people on screen can't experience, and then that becomes scarier, and they just don't ever do it once. And it's like, I just want to, like, tell these people, like, go back and watch Clash of the Titans. Those scenes with Medusa are amazing because they involve you get the audience involved in the tension. And here you're like, well, they looked up, shit, you're done. Oh, you took a blindfold off? Oh, he's going to get you now. And it's just like, whatever. It's just like, argh. So I wish they would have invested some time in the mythology stuff, but as it stands, it's as if a sixth grader that has had a lot of caffeine is recalling to you what he remembers about the War of 1812 at like midnight. And it's just like, it's that cohesive, and it's just like,
I've always felt like the Slender Man character has been something an eighth grader made up. Like, head is no cohesion.
Isn't it, though?
It very well could be, you know? But there's also a number of, like, immature people on 4chan that make up shit. So, like, but it does, to me, it sounds like the kind of shit that, like if even Austin at, like, you know, 12, like, he'll come in and be like, I thought of a monster. Okay, what? This, and this. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. So then you could, like, do this. No, because they can also do this. Oh, okay, cool. So then, like, what happens if, so then really to defeat him, you do that? No. Cause actually, wait, remember that first thing? Take that off. Like, yeah. You know, and then like add this instead.
So they did that in real time during Slender Man. It's
just got that breathless ADD idea of creating a character. And like the fact that it's kind of created by the internet at large means there's no consistency. But you'd think that like someone would want to hone that down to a concept.
Make it Candyman.
Yeah.
That's basically the thing. Josh, you said the exact thing. That was exactly what I said. It was like, if they had gone for more of a Freddy Krueger / Candyman thing, you've got something. Because you've got something that's got parameters, it's got borders, there's something there to really draw from. And it's just like, it's right there. I mean, it's sitting right on the table. And it's just like, damn it. Like, I don't even want to know what they spent on that fucking thing, because it's just like, it'll just depress me. Because it's just golly. So it was, you know, it was underwhelming. Underwhelming, I believe, is the term.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Was there at least a scene where somebody offered him donuts and he was like, oh no, I'm watching my figure. Nobody's going to be scared of Chubby Man.
And there's
Dad Bod Man.
Yeah. God damn it.
There's this great bit. This is why I think that the bulb was raw, was bad. Was because there's this great bit where one of the characters goes into the dream sequence where it's in a forest and like he's supposed to be kind of coming out of a tree, you know? But it's like, because you can't fucking see anything, you just gotta go, I think it's supposed to be scary. Like, it's supposed to be like, oh, he's coming out of the tree. But then, like, by the time you notice he's coming out of the tree, like, oh, there's that fucker. Like, it's not like anything. Like, oh, jeez.
Dread.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, he's sort of like, ta-da!
Like, this summer, like a magician's Waldo? Assistant.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, god damn it all.
Ta-da, lion madness.
On the opposite side of the experiential scale, I spent the last week working on a film for my buddy Aaron Koontz is directing part of this thing called Scare Package, which will be out next year. It's got a bunch of segments directed by people that we know and some of the people we really like and some great folks. And this is kind of like the big part of it. It's a big, big chunk of it. And the crew was, I mean, there was 40 some odd people, close to 50 at some point, running around. A couple of guys from the show Face Off were in the effects department. Season one and Eric Zapata from season 3 or 4. They were part of the effects department, which I got to send you guys some more pictures, by the way, from that. I forgot to. So that's what I spent my last week doing. I was working on a film set and just got just exhausted and sweaty and worn out. And every time I walked down a certain particular part of one of the sets, I just couldn't wipe a shitting grin off my face the entire fucking time. So nice. It was pretty fabulous.
We'll make sure to pimp that hard.
Oh, I can't wait. It's pretty darn cool. It was a hoot and a half. Plus, it's in a hospital that's about to be torn down. So there was no limitations on what you could do to the hospital. So it was like, there's no worry about cleanup. There's no worry about anything. So it was just like, I mean, to give you some indication, I carried in a couple 40-gallon drums of blood, and that was our third blood shipment. So we had some fun. But it was a pleasure, and it was so much fun to do. And as it gets closer, and then there's actual stuff that gets released by Paper Street, who is producing it, then I'll be able to say some more stuff, and I've got some pictures I can share once we get closer to it. But anyway, that's what I did my last week doing.
Nice.
How Charlie spent his summer vacation.
It's fun. It's fun. Oh, yeah. Got a little friendship bracelet made of bones.
That's a great idea.
Which bones?
Yeah. Like, bones. Yeah. Normally when you get one of those, you just kind of run and don't stop running.
It's true.
It's fair.
Yeah. Unless it's made of like packaging of bones DVDs of the series, in which case it's fine. Speaking of things that are not okay... maybe speaking of special effects, I don't know. This short this week is called Surgery, which Cirugía, and it's 10 minutes of torture porn.
I would suggest it might actually even be more torture porn than like things like Saw that get accused of being torture porn.
No, this is like the thing that I thought of, like, torture porn was.
Yeah.
When somebody said like Saw is just torture porn or Hostel, I thought, it's just somebody squirming while somebody does horrible things to them.
Yeah.
And then there's this.
Yeah.
And then there's the most obvious thing you could do with that, which is to make it surprise. He's actually a monster who killed a child. So he deserves everything.
The family's getting revenge. The plot's thin, obviously.
Yeah, it's just gore showcase.
It is. And that's the thing. Like, as a demo reel for whoever did their effects, like, it's a strong one. It took me 3 tries to get through because sometimes I don't know what it is that happens anymore, because normally I'm fine now. It's been years and years and years. But every now and then something will just flip my stomach and I just all of a sudden I start sweating and I'm like, nope, got to take a break. And this is only 10 minutes long. It took me 3 different chunks to get through it because it's just something would happen. I'd be like, ugh, nope, ugh, too gross. Nah. And I'd like walk over, like do something else, like make some tea, and then come back and watch a little more. And then I realized I had to make sure I finished it because I was going to have the boy over for dinner and did not want to be watching it while he was here. I dug the look of the special effects and everything like that. The final little setup when I guess it's mom. Like walks out of the room and is just doing the strut down the hall past all the RVs and stuff. Mm-hmm. I really liked that because the inclusion of the RV, so it's not just an empty warehouse or whatever. It's just like, this is weird. And then when you get the credits shot of them panning away from just this bucolic hillside estate that happens to have the huge ass barn to house things like that, you're like, that's actually a slightly different take that I thought was sort of interesting. Mm. You know, like I kind of liked that idea because it's not like a grungy downtown warehouse.
Right.
It's like
it's
these
not
guys,
in Rob Zombieville.
They dragged him out to wherever they live. And that's all happening there. And it's just, it's a strange thing.
I mean, there's some cool drone shots in the beginning and end. Mm-hmm. I think it's neat now that your production can have like a $500 budget and you can still get helicopter shots.
A perceived
that's
value
super cool.
Of,
yeah.
What do you think there, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This was kind of, this has a two-problem. One of them, which is that the other is sort of like, it is a sort of an effects kind of situation, you know, kind of a showcase for sort of some gore effects and stuff like that. So is that part of it. But then there's the other part, which is that like, you know, I've often wrestled with this because I'm vehemently anti-death penalty. But people have asked me, and I've had people I've worked with or people I've known over the years, and be like, well, yeah, but what if it was somebody broke into your house and then killed your son or whatever else, and then wouldn't you want them to visit the family? Like, no, I'd fucking kill him. Like, that's right. Not, I mean, but it's like, that's murder, you see?
It is,
that,
yeah,
there's
exactly.
A difference between if I make a decision to murder somebody, that's murder. I don't want an institution like here in Texas where there's at least 2 cases where it looks like they've killed an innocent person, institutionally, and it's just sort of like, I don't want that. But it's like, if I make a decision to murder somebody, that's my decision to murder them. Now, in this one...
Then you still face the consequences.
Exactly. And then, yeah. But then the problem with this, though, is that you go, okay, the reveal is, oh, he killed this child. And then my question is, so like, okay, well, we don't know how, as it doesn't really matter, but like, we don't really know how. Was it a drunk driving accident? Was it, who knows? So we don't know how, what happened. But then secondarily, like, they are not, they didn't just walk up to him and shoot him. They're like, you know, they're going to put him through and torture him and heal him and then do all this stuff. Like, at that point, like, who are we supposed to be sympathetic to? Is it the family that lost the daughter?
There's no one to be sympathetic to.
You know, yeah. And it's sort of like, and it's at that point, like, I understand the exercise. I mean, I'm not going to be condescending and be like, oh, I don't understand what you're trying to do. But at some point, like, there has to be some human angle to it. There has to be something where we understand to the extent at which these guys are going, or we understand that one of the family members doesn't know this is happening, or one of the family members, you know, was so grief-stricken that they, you know, they killed themselves. There's some other humanistic part of it. Because as it stands, it's just kind of like this, like, one-note pendulum swing. And at that point, like, I'm just too old to be patient enough with that kind of stuff. Like, you got to give me more human stuff.
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, Josh, you're right. Like, this is, to me, like, the more true definition of torture porn. But this is also, I think, like, aside from the effects bonanza, this is just revenge porn.
Yeah,
this is true. Death Wish. This is, you know, I spit on your grave, you know, whatever it is. So it's just like, well, okay, you've made your protagonist into just an ancillary antagonist, so now everybody's guilty. You can decide how much you think of their motivations, but they're all wrong. And, like, the crime of passion, like, you know, like you said, if someone shoots your husband or wife or kid or whatever, and you go and running out and find them and kill them, that is a human emotion. It is, you know, you'd hope you'd have the restraint not to, because it's still wrong. But, like, then, okay, that might happen. You might make that choice to think, I don't care, I'm going to throw my life away to have this revenge. But it's not terribly interesting to watch in a, just in, like, a kind of bored fashion, like, a very cold fashion. Like, you know, it just, I was really just impressed. I spent my time, like, looking at what they're doing.
Yeah.
And kind of going, I'm sure there's a plot for, like, the last 30 seconds maybe, but if not, if this is just this, which, and I've seen stuff that is, like, that's wicked lame. And Crypt TV doesn't usually do stuff that is just an utter turd. Mm. I don't always like everything they do, but, like, they try to have something going on.
I feel like this might as well have, though. That capper was not very convincing.
Yeah.
And not very convincing to say that this wasn't just 9 minutes of torture porn, you know?
I mean, so, I think that's the thing to save it from people being able to say it was.
I don't buy it.
Yeah.
It's a demo reel for, and you know, some of it made me uncomfortable, and then I kind of resent that on a weird level. Like, you didn't earn that. Of course you can show somebody pounding nails into somebody's face and it's going to make me squirm. That's easy.
That's how I'm human.
Yeah. Like, that's the banana peel. You know, it's the clown shoes. Yeah. Like, what else have you got? So
I'm a down on this.
Yeah. I'm a don't watch. Pretty, I mean, they're really good with editing and sound design to...
Technically good.
To complement the effects, you know? Because half of it is just what you don't see happening and is implied.
And sound design is huge for making sure.
All that's clever, but there's no purpose at work, so I'd say no.
Yeah, no for me.
Charlie said no?
That is correct.
Yeah,
I said, Charlie, do one thing for me.
I said no. No.
All right, our first movie of the week then is on our Amazon Prime Fest is Forsaken or Los Abandonados.
Oh,
gracious.
And my goodness, if there was a more CW movie ever CW'd, I've never seen it.
And yet, with other actors that seem like they would never in a million years be hired for the CW because they don't fit the mold.
Like Jonathan Shake.
Who's that?
The head vampire.
Oh, see, I don't know.
Also, in That Thing You Do.
He's just aged out of all kinds of stuff. I need to.
Yeah.
But it's just, it feels weird. Like, this is kind of a teen romp, and then just isn't. Like, I don't quite get how this is not. Like, this should be, like, I Know What You Did Last Summer from, like, half the cast.
Except they're all in their early 20s.
Right. Or not necessarily early, I bet. But, you know, it is a strange beast, you know, like so many things we watch.
Right.
Do you want to run down the theory here of the plot?
You got Dudeface from Dawson's Creek and Dudeface from Roswell, who are also both in Final Destination together.
Yeah,
right,
which we discovered
now.
Earlier before recording. Yeah.
You got Isabella Miko from Coyote Ugly. One of the women, vampire women, is Giles's girlfriend from Buffy for a couple episodes in between things. And then Jonathan Shake from That Thing You Do and Day of the Dead Bloodline.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
So lots of familiar faces in here. And it's, I think it has on its mind to be, like you said, Near Dark plus Lost Boys plus
John Carpenter's Vampires.
John Carpenter's Vampires.
I feel like it's those three movies shoved together.
Yeah, you got like guy driving across country in his cool Mercedes. He's going to have to take some back roads, because of course he is. And vampire hunter that he picks up hitchhiking, and then girl who's
been like the college age frog brother.
Yeah.
And then they go to the motel where they have a bloodbath. You know, like.
And like a literal.
Oh, yeah, true, yeah.
Literally. And they pick up the girl who's like vampire jonesing, and you find out that you can catch vampire, but then it's the setup from Near Dark, where if you kill the guy, the head sire, then yeah. And everybody gets uninfected and all is cool.
And there's some interesting creative. I mean, I gotta give this fellow Cardone some credit. Like, there's some creative ideas, you know? Like, there's some interesting attempts at, like, not doing the thing of, like, a zombie movie where it's like, in our zombie movie, it's a frog, and a frog fucked a fish, and then the fish was eaten by a sheep, and then sheep crapped out a thing, and it turned out to be this other thing, and, like, whatever.
And then the cheese stood alone.
Is this, yeah, and then some kind of Red Rover thing pops into that. I don't know, who knows, but it's just, like, that whole thing of, like, that whole part of it I thought was interesting, and also the whole concept of, like, the Renfield as the day driver deal. Like, that's cool. Like, I just think that was an interesting... Oh, yeah. That was a very creative idea. You know, this idea that, like, how do you get around from place to place if you're a desert-dwelling vampire? Like, you thrash the guy into driving for you.
Yeah, I think the day driver might be my favorite character.
Because
he spends so much time just being like, God damn it. And you have to, you sort of wonder what he's getting out of it, because there's no real obvious rewards for him.
Right.
He seems to just kind of do it. So, I mean, he gets to kill people wantonly, so maybe he's just, you know, that kind of guy. He'd like to be killing people, and he's safer doing that with them, because then they can defend him. But he has a weird-ass job of basically just being there, like, taking care of their light work and driving them around all day.
Right.
But he's not like he's, like, wicked rich. So he's going to the bar and buying shots for everyone and getting laid at the hotels because he's got a separate room or anything, or, like, not driving a fucking sweet car, even. Like, you know, I don't quite get what he's getting out of it, so that's maybe a plot hole, but like.
I think it's a threshing thing. I think it's like a. I think it's a. You're going to do this thing. And he goes, yeah, I'm going to do this thing. And it's, yeah. I think it's one of those. But although he does get a Josh. He does get a she it in there, which I thought was good. Always look for those.
I mean, I think there's also the. Hey, you. Drive us around and do our dirty work, and then in like 2 years we'll promote you to vampire,
or
and then you get to be immortal.
Hey, you drive us around for 2 years, or we just kill you now.
Right,
that's also an option. You know, like the idea of like,
but don't go dragging us into the daylight because we'll explode.
Right.
I do enjoy the guy picks up hitchhiker who turns out to be vampire hunter, and you know, and there's nest of vampires that they eventually destroy. Is the basic premise. I love how Vampire Hunter is like, hey, dude, there's vampires. And the guy's like, no fucking way. Because half of this dialogue is, no fucking way.
Dialogue is not great.
So then he just goes out, grabs Vampire by the boot, drags her into the sun, watches her explode with the guy. And he's like, fucking see?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. There doesn't have to be like trying to convince him for an hour. He's just like.
There's no like ancient tome that they flip through to like. Read the lost book of the Bible that talks about Lilith or something. Like, yeah, I kind of dig that.
It's like
I do like the idea that you can stave off the transformation based on some doctor that got bit that was one of the doctors that worked on the AIDS cocktail in the 80s, who, having known a lot about blood then, was like, there's got to be a way I can slow this down. And, like, so the fact they're just taking, like, a handful of gel caps every morning, and, like, otherwise they said, it's like 7 days if you just get bit. What if you are taking the cocktail? You might go about 2 years, but it's still inevitable unless you kill, you know, the vampire that made you.
Right, but you're buying your time.
That's a fun bit of mythology. Like,
yeah,
you know,
it's very interesting.
It adds urgency. And, like, the fact that he's like, yeah, I've been tracking him around. And it's like, you didn't know shit about tracking people when you got bit. You know, the kid does know way too much vampire lore for being a random kid that just got bit by a vampire. You know, like he said, he went to the hospital and he found the doctor that made the cocktail. That, why would that doctor know the entire story of the knights and stuff and all? Like, there's the kid knows, the vampire hunter knows far too much history.
It's
good because it's interesting.
He audited a community college class on vampire mythology.
That's probably true. Yeah, he was like eyeballing the girl in the third row. But the but that's things like at some point it's like, why the fuck does he know all this? Because that if I got bit by a vampire tonight and woke up the next morning, is like, okay, I've watched enough horror movies to know that like I've got fangs and I crave blood. I'm a vampire. I wouldn't know where vampires came from. Like that, in no way would that give me the history of vampires, unless that's like instinct, like wolves and shit, known to like bite things. But
maybe there was a brain download,
right? Like it got a little silly with that. However, I actually liked the mythology they created. Like I thought it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of came down on the side of this has so many interesting elements and is so deadly boring to me. So this whole thing, I just was like, eh. Partly because I hated both of my leads.
Mm.
And then the...
We're talking good guy leads or good guy and bad guy lead?
Both of the good guy leads. Mm. And then vampire almost turning girl was just kind of a wet sock.
Mm.
You know, she's just there. Evil vampire is fun for a bit. But then it's just, eh. It didn't have the spark that Lost Boys did or even that Near Dark did. And I'm not like a huge fan of Near Dark, but
I didn't have
it either. So it was weird to me that like this many people doing something that should be interesting was just like, I was constantly fighting the urge to pick up my phone and fuck around on it. You know,
See this one, I don't think it fires on as many cylinders as it could. And it's, you know, we'll see when we get to the ratings, but like, it's got its issues for sure. But I still thought like, I'd kind of start to go, dude, something's got to happen, and then a little bit of something would happen. I'd be like, all right, you got me for another 10 minutes, and then I'd go, all right, come on, and like, they kind of just kept trolling me in like a fish, like, which got me to the end of the movie. One of the things that I was super impressed by, I wanted to make sure I mentioned, the fucking shotgun blast. Where the head just disintegrates?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy shit, that comes out of left field. Like, just, oh, suddenly you have a huge practical effects budget. Like, that looked amazing. And that was, I think, what, the second vampire kill? Which I guess technically counts as cutting the head off the vampire.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess, because, like, that was always the thing, too.
You got to be severing the spinal column at that point.
Something like that, yeah. But it's just, it's always interesting to see if people are going to be like, no, you can just, you know, do this or do that. But I think they cleave pretty closely to the kind of original, as we think of them, rules.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you also have the heart, the kind of the heart punch through that.
Oh yeah, that's fun.
Desert
too.
Idiot, that whole thing. Although we are forgetting one of the great things about a movie that gets released from like the late 90s to early 2000s, which is once he gets the car and has the kind of the send off from the boss guy, and then whatever else, and he's out on the road. You get the drop in with the Eve 6, and then you get like a road flasher, and you're like, oh, 2001. What's going on, 2001? It's just like, you get Eve 6, and you get like a road flashing thing. I'm like, yeah.
It's funny. That song is another one, along with I Will Buy You a Big House.
Oh, yeah, Everclear. Yeah.
Everclear, and All the Small Things that I only hear your voice.
Oh, charming. That's funny.
So I just, as soon as they were like, promise not to try, not to fuck with your mind, I could just saw you at karaoke. It's like, oh, damn, I miss Charlie.
It's just funny because it's so of that, like, you just, and think of so many movies that came out in the late 90s, early 2000s, and there was always those road shots or the walking down the hallway the first time at college or whatever else, and there's always one of those, not even like a needle drop, but it's just like, they all have those scenes with whatever was those, the kind of top 40 ones that clicked in that area, and go through all of them, all the teen ones, all the kind of stuff. They will all have those specific soundtrack selling scenes. And in this one, just happened to be Eve 6. I was like, ah, that's great.
Somebody once told me.
Anyway. Well, even Shrek did.
Yeah.
Shrek has, I don't care what anybody thinks, Shrek has one of the best soundtracks of all time. You got the Eels on there. You got Nick Cave, right?
I don't know the soundtrack for Shrek aside from the one.
Rufus Wainwright, you know.
I like Nick Cave and I like Good the stuff. Eagles.
It's the second one even has Tom Waits on there.
It's true.
Use.
As does the movie Robots, amazingly.
I know.
That one I'll never get my head around.
By the way, those road flashers, where the fuck did they go?
Oh yeah, they just like did they show up at that party? No. They had to make a convention in Van Nuys.
I would have loved to have them be luring him to the vampire nest.
Yeah.
They're so not.
Yeah, if they were like, they're like a standard hotel 4 miles up on the left.
They're like a titty mirage.
It's true.
Well, I believe that was the name of the new Bond girl.
Oh, this one also suffers from that thing that, like, they want to set something in a certain particular geographical area, but they're like, don't study how the geography works in that area. Because he's like, he says, oh, well, pass through Phoenix and then this, that, whatever else. And then, like, with a little small town, like, about getting the tire. And he's like, well, the closest place is Kingman. Like, motherfucker, that is through 5 towns and then Phoenix. And then back up the other direction, away from where he's supposed to be geographically. Like, Kingman's way the fuck on the other direction of Arizona. And it's just sort of like, you know what, if you could have learned how it worked? Just with a map. Like, you don't have to be from Arizona to know that. Like, you can just look at a map and go, that doesn't make geographical sense. I should pick a different town. Tubac. That sounds like a funny sounding one. Yeah, we'll pick that one. And it's just sort of like, that's all I would have taken. But then it's just like, it comes up so often in things where, and I was at friends from back east that, like, we talk about that shows up, then they said something like in Connecticut, and they're like, oh, we just went over to this place. Like, you just went over there. Like, that's 15-mile-an-hour curvy, winding roads through mountains for 3 hours. Like, you don't just go over there just for the afternoon. Like, that's not a thing you can do. And it's just sort of, but in this one, it just happened to be my home state of Arizona. So it's just like,
I also love the
Bugs Bunny popping up. You know, he should have taken a right turn at somewhere else.
I love that he's going from L.A. to Miami, but he ends up on these 55-mile-an-hour two-lane roads in Arizona.
Yeah.
that would never happen. Like,
Why would you do that?
I drove from Tennessee to Orange County, and the whole way is Highway 40.
Yeah.
And it's 4 lanes of blacktop at least.
Mm-hmm.
But it is that, like, it's the Rain Man syndrome where, like, oh, no, we have to do the back roads. We're real America.
No, fuck that.
We'll just pretend that there's no such thing as a freeway because then we don't have a movie.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
I don't think he even gets lost. It's like his path from L.A. to Miami takes him through fucking Monument Valley, which is north of Flagler.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I mean.
Close.
geography is going, right.
Like, you got 7 days, you'd be lucky to make it. I'm like, well, we would drive from Minnesota to Orlando in 26 hours. Yeah, now, it's going to be a little further. But 26 hours to get from the top of the states to the bottom. So it's a little wider to go from the... So, I mean, if you're hardcore, 4 days?
It took me 2 full days to get from Tennessee to California.
Yeah. So you add another day then.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So 3 to 4 days, you're fine. Like, he has nothing to worry about.
Maybe he showed them his route, and they're like, yeah, you'll be lucky to get that in 7 days.
It's true. So he's doing like a family circus. It's just going up and around.
And, you know, there you go.
Down the street and up through the thing, and then went through Mr. Jenkins' yard, and Mr. Jenkins, you know, got really upset and caused this whole thing.
So the end of the day, our three plucky vampire hunters kill the vampire, which is really good news for two of our plucky vampire hunters.
Oh, yeah, right? I mean, good gracious. That was...
Which is weird, because you'd think you'd remember the vampire that bit you.
Right.
But Partridge Frog Boy, Frog Brother, does not, apparently. So he's like, oh, poop stains. I'm still a vampire. Good on ya. Peace him out. I got to go beyond
the earth.
I got to go, yeah, I got to walk the earth trying to kill this vampire for a run at a time. And the guy's like, I'm going with you. And he's like, no, you're not. And then cut to 3 months later in apparently Colorado or somewhere near it when CW guy catches up with college age Frog Brother guy. He's like, what? And he's like, yeah, I'm here to help. I heard he's in Denver. And it's like, there are two huge problems with this. We already know that this dude's had 3 months to learn how to track someone.
Right.
And not even the supernatural someone, just someone. How the fuck is he finding out where this dude has been going? Like, it's insane. And then he's also been able to track the vampires. Now, maybe there you can follow, like, mass killings.
Hmm.
Except they kind of allude to that a little bit.
Yeah, but they sort of cover their tracks. And he's like, no, if you know what to look for. And he's like, he doesn't. He hasn't had, like, a ton of practice.
Okay, have you met Kurt Smith? But, he's kind of dim.
Yeah, right? So it's just, it is a little like, I mean, I get what they're going for, right? It's like, all right, now there's two of us, so now we are truly the Frog Brothers, and we will go destroy this vampire, and like, good, that's fun, that's a hopeful ending.
And like, everybody ready for Forsaken 2, but, and nobody was.
Like, Josh, if you get in your car and just drive away right now, and let's say I spend a day or two packing, I will never find you again. Ever.
Oh, no.
Just never again. And that's, you know, like, just, it's just not going to happen. That's with the internet. Like, I will just never know where you are. Because, like, that's... We live in a really goddamn big country. Like, it's one of those things that is a common trope of like, yeah, we've been tracking them since Tulsa. You're like, how? Who do you get? Are they on a CB all the time? Like Breaker Breaker Snowball Vampire? Like, what are they doing? I don't get it. So, anyway, I get where there's things that would kind of strain credulity or maybe make you kind of roll your eyes in this. I do think it's kind of fun. Like I said, it's just sort of an amalgamation of other vampire movies, but for a what was this
2001
movie, that was not a hugely awesome time for horror, I don't believe. So like,
that was right around when Valentine came out.
Sure, but I mean, like, there's not a ton, you know what I mean? Yeah. This is still that kind of late 90s slump, with the exception of like Scream or whatever. But I think at least someone was making an actual horror movie here. Which,
yeah.
Ever since like the mid-90s, we've watched people shy farther and farther away of actually making a horror movie and making like a weird teen movie that has like a vampire, but he's too sexy to kill. And so like that's... This one at least was just straight up horror. Like they're going to rip people's throats out and blow their heads off with shotguns and like, fuck it. And so maybe it's not perfect, but like that's still fun at least to some degree. And at least for the time, it was good. You know, we're getting back into real horror now apparently, which is nice, but... I don't know. It's something that it was a little surprising because when I saw the year, I was expecting a even dumber, more tame movie.
Yeah, so. I think I hadn't watched it ever because I thought it was another like PG-13. I Know What You Did Last Summer.
That's what I assumed
deal.
It was. Yeah.
Which it definitely isn't. It was fun watching it with Jess. The very first scene, like during the credits, you have girl showering the blood off of her.
So gratuitous, and there were boobs in this movie.
She does the, I call it the one-handed blood boob squeegee, where she just lifts up a hand, like her left hand, and slides it down the left boob and wipes the blood off. And I looked at Jess and I was like, is that? She's like, no, I would never touch my tits that way in the shower. Like, you use the opposite hand, and you don't just like rub down, like you do sideways, maybe up, certainly not down. So she was not thrilled with the verisimilitude of the shower.
Fair.
Scenes. But did appreciate the boobs.
Yeah, a lot of boobs in this. Should we just throw a number on this?
Yeah, I mean, this is my least favorite of the week. I'd found it surprisingly dull for all the things that was working in its favor. So just one that never landed the hooks for me. I would say 4.5 out of 10, that thing you do is biting people in the neck.
Lol. I enjoyed it more. It's not my favorite vampire movie. And not a terrible movie either, though. Like I would rather watch this again than Near Dark. I think I like this more than I like Near Dark. Now I don't remember what number I gave Near Dark, so like that I might be totally blowing that. Mm. But like, definitely like my impressions of other vampire movies we've watched, like I liked this a little more than some of the other ones that were sort of the also-rans in the vampire genre. So I'm going to say this is, we'll say 6.5 out of 10 catatonic morphine zombies. No, wait, vampires. Shit.
Heroes in a half shell. Turtle power. Catatonic, yes. Morphine vampires. Catatonic morphine vampires. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the middle. Like, I kind of enjoy a lot of the creative aspects of this. I didn't find Kurt Smith to be as annoying, I guess, but Senor needs to take a shower. Like, he just sort of is like, everything is just sort of like, yeah, retarded. And he's just sort of like, eh. And so he's a little bit annoying at points, but, you know, I mean, you know, points for creativity for sure. I love the day driver concept, the Renfield thing. I thought that was super, super cool. Thought that was kind of a neat thing. And then of course the whole like, Eve 6, needle drop was quite lovely. I also like the amount that guns can affect them too. They sound like a gun battle in that old lady's house. And it's just shooting each other with guns.
That poor old lady. That reminds me. I felt bad because, like, normally your heroes are like, no, we can't risk another innocent's lives because of our battle. And they're just like, fuck it. Hey, lady, can we hang out here? Yeah, they're like 8 feet behind us, but we're just going to hide out here and drink your lemon drink. What?
Well, that whole part of it was just sort of like, it's like you're not going to come in. Like, we're in kind of trouble. Like, she's kind of sick, and she's really sick. And, well, we're going to – and then, okay, we're going to come in. Okay, no, she's doing okay. Now, what's the deal with going on with you guys? Like, okay, we're going to just change your entire understanding of – science and your worldview, and like they were gonna have a gun battle in your house. So it's like,
yep.
So that's kind of a fun thing. So I'm gonna say, I'll be a little bit lower than Matt, but I'll say six, because I kind of enjoyed a lot of creativity. So I'll say 6 out of 10. I'll say 6 out of 10. 6 out of 10 in advance.
Nice.
Was it $45? I'm like, $45.
I know, right?
That's a lot of money back now.
Jesus. Well, he's so proud of himself too, right? He's just sort of like, he's like, yo, in advance. He's just like, yeah, motherfucker, because like, that $45 is really going to give me pause.
Right. Break or roll, gentlemen?
I can roll.
I'm good.
All right.
Rolling on into Hideaway or El Escondite.
Escondite.
Escondite. And talk about, like, this is just the week of memorable casts for some of these.
This one blew my mind.
Yeah, this is bonkers.
I knew Jeff Goldblum and Alicia Silverstone. When the kid shows up, Jess says, my God, that's Jeremy Sisto. I'm like, no, it's not, honey. I mean, he kind of looks like him, but this was the same year Clueless came out. Jeremy Sisto didn't look like that. And, yep.
Yeah, he did.
Totally Jeremy Sisto. And then Alfred Molina, just kind of hanging out.
Well, and also, Christine Lottie as well.
To recognize him. Who then?
Christine Lottie plays Goldblum's wife, and it's sort of like with what has to be one of the worst written mom characters in ever. Like, she is
not terribly strong.
She's really lousy, and like, I like her as an actress. I think she's kind of great, but all she is like, oh, you're going to some sex dungeon to kind of like hang out with the entire offensive line of the Dolphins. No problem, whatever. We don't give a shit. That doesn't really matter. And then it's like Goldblum's like, I'm having visions. This is a killer woman. For like 45 minutes. And it's just like.
You forget, though, she is also Karate Mom.
Well, that is true. That is true. But it's just sort of like, but for that whole first swing, one to the other, you're like, what are we doing here? Like, geez. Like, you can give her actual stuff to do. She's a good actor. Good creature.
I mean, this is really, it's Goldblum and Sisto. And everyone else is just kind of orbiting them, you know?
Yeah.
The Lottie doesn't get a whole lot to do. Alicia Silverstone doesn't get a whole lot to do.
Not particularly, no.
It's funny seeing her in the other side of 90s fashion, because she's all grunged out pretty much for this, and just the opposite of the preppy stuff from Clueless.
Yeah.
But our basic plot, if we can...
if we must.
Satan-worshipping psycho son dude is... kills his mother, his sister, and himself. His spirit goes to hell, which is awesome CGI.
Oh, it's Lawnmower Man.
Diablo 2 meets Lawnmower Man Hell. 1995
CGI, where everybody's just like, we can do this now. Look.
Right. We can make this look ultra real. Like,
can you?
They were so busy pondering if they could. They didn't stop to think if they should.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it hurts. Then
Blavin.
Is brought back to life by Dr. Dad. In the meantime, Goldblum crashes his car and dies, and then it goes to CGI Heaven, which features kind of cat lady faced neon blue god thing in the lotus position, and then is returned to life. And can now has some kind of psychic bond with Psycho Kid.
And the doctors say, he's been gone this long. You know what happened last time we did one that was almost this long? And it's like, they were telepathically connected to a serial killer? Like, what do they mean by
that? The last one was the serial killer.
Oh, but why would that... Did that make him a serial killer?
I don't know, but...
Because then what did it do? What does that mean?
His eyes are all fucked up.
Huh? Yeah, but that's what I mean. It's like, you know what happened last time? Nothing. He was already a serial killer. What does that mean? What does that line mean?
His eyes are all fucked up. I don't know.
I have questions.
I don't care.
better actually answer there right there.
Yeah, looking. This is not a gift horse that I'm on floss. Because it's all about weird cosmology. And I'm kind of a sucker for a movie that will try and render an idea of the afterlife in 100% literal terms. You don't see Goldblum die and then a little glimmer in his eye and he goes into the light and you assume he goes to heaven. They rendered a very specific vision they had of heaven and put floating spirit Goldblum in it.
If he had a heart and some wings.
Do you want to know something?
Same thing for hell. Yeah.
There are visions of hell and those monsters and all the different things like that. This director fellow who directed this, Brett Leonard, guess what else he directed? Lawnmower Man.
Oh,
that makes perfect sense.
Well, then,
think about aesthetically speaking. Like he did Lawnmower Man 3 years before, and it's like that makes perfect sense. Like they dove into all that technology, and then 3 years worth of advancement in technology, and he's like, we've got to have it. We have to do it.
And I'm sure that's got to be the thing. He's like, okay, they mocked my computer graphics. It's been 3 years. Look at all these advancements. This time for sure. And I feel bad. Like I'm sure the dude's trying, but it's
just fascinating, isn't it? Because it's just sort of like. You can see that this is somebody who really, really is interested in those aesthetics. And, what do you get when you get 3 years worth of technology? Like, you get, quote-unquote, better technology. And it's sort of by our standards now, it looks real silly. But it's just sort of he must have just been beside himself excited, oh, my gosh, I have access to all this other shit. One other thing that I love with the grunge version of Alicia Silverstone is that Cool Dad Goldblum gets her Pearl Jam tickets that are $28. Yep. I paused it to look. I was curious.
I did too because I want to see who's opening as well.
Yeah, that's what I was. I was curious, and $28. This is sort of like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I remember those days. we said that there's a telepathic link between Jeff Goldblum and the serial killer kid,
right?
Okay,
and those rules are all over the board.
They really are. That's what I was going to say.
Well, they can see through each other's eyes, period.
I guess, right? But while they're sleeping, though? Is it? Or is it when they're... Can they just suddenly go into a fugue state?
Goldblum figures out he can do it on purpose, and then he realizes that Sisto can do it on purpose, too.
Gotcha. Because that was tricky for me to figure out, too.
Because he starts, involuntarily, he has flashes, and he doesn't know where they're coming from, and he can't really explain them.
So, yeah, because he's at first thinking they're his memories, basically, right? Or something. Because, he calls the cops to that one roadside one.
Yeah.
And then I guess it's been long enough since it happened that serial killer guy has, taken the body away?
Yeah, took it for his Batman Returns sculpture.
Hideaway sculpture? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that the titular Hideaway? Because I could not figure out why this movie is called fucking Hideaway.
Yeah, this is my Hideaway.
I got it.
Yeah, he does. I did the little... For whenever a movie uses its name in the movie.
I was kind of hoping the band Hathaway would show up at some point.
But there is
what is love, baby, don't hurt me.
There is a band that shows up in this that does has to have the slightly malnourished bassist who is just sort of trying to dry hump his guitar. You know, it's like you're gonna have to have that in there. It's very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Goldblum's the fashions in this are not to be believed either.
Oh golly!
Goldblum spends half the time in this. I guess we would call it a sweater that has the giant boat neck and is loose fitting a tunic all the way down to below his fly.
It is weird.
He's draped in this thing, this fabric thing, and it's kind of beautiful.
They basically just skinned a sheep and threw it at him. Goldblum and serial killer eventually figure out they can see each other.
Right. And then it's a deadly pas de deux.
Yeah, exactly. And so, blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, Goldblum's daughter, Alicia Silverstone, becomes the next potential victim.
Right.
Heightening the stakes for, someone probably cared more. But let's see. He goes to the club, right? Does Goldblum or no?
No, Sisto meets girlfriend at the club. Or daughter at the club. And he's like, you shall be eventually the lady that
I
take.
And then her friends do the good lookout. And they're like, that guy's a fucking creep. Don't go with that guy.
Right.
That's awesome.
He's got the fucking welding goggles on in the bar. And
that really impressed me.
Oh, Jesus, that shot.
He's stuck up for. It's so, so amazing.
He is, I mean, like, Sisto is the absence of menace in this movie. So I guess, you know, in an objective sense, that that's a weak link. That your villain is not at all threatening.
No.
For someone who is on the roller coaster ride that I was on, I was absolutely into it.
Oh, yeah. And it's, I can see how this could be fun if you can kind of just lose yourself in it and just go, like, whatever. But, like, he just was so stupid to me. Like, and again, part of that is just, like, the costuming and the era and whatever. But he never once has any level of, like, intensity, dread, or malice. And so it's just, he looks like every kid in my high school that wore a long black trench coat and sunglasses to school when they were 16 that wanted you to think they were super intense.
Oh, he's the Crow plus Neo plus the Joker.
And it's just like, yeah, and it's just like, but you're not actually that. That's what you see when you put this on. But you are the guy from math class that never does his homework and then just suddenly looks down when the teacher yells at him.
And
then when you walk out, you're like,
at home.
I almost punched that bitch in the face. And like, you said that for 360 days this year. Like, you are nothing. You are not a human. And like, he looks like that kind of kid. And so I'm just entirely not believing him as my villain. Like, there's just no danger here.
I thought he did it. There are a couple of scenes where I think he gets some real menace. Like when he goes to get the address from the, and like to figure out where they live, goes to the antique shop and everything, and he's kind of menacing the lady. I mean, it gets broken because any source of light causes him pain, so he's pretty easy to lay out. But at the same time, like, it's kind of a fun game of cat and mouse where he's trying to get information, figuring out when he can kind of hijack Goldblum's eyes and see what he needs to see. And Goldblum trying to figure out how to not show him what's happening and meet around him. And then, like, our climactic battle takes place on the set of Batman Returns. And I thought that was really neat.
Yeah.
Because he's building a big sculpture.
Yeah.
And putting dead bodies in it. And then he's got Alicia Silverstone up there, but he's not going to kill her just yet.
Because movie.
He needs to have time for Goldblum to get there. And I love Karate Mom just suddenly finding it, laying him out for a minute or two. And then I love that God and the Devil show up and get involved.
Yep.
Because usually in your God and Devil type movies, God is absent.
Yeah, there's some kind of proxy.
Like in the Exorcist, you see all the demon activity. God doesn't show.
Mm-hmm.
He's just hanging back to see what happens. Just same devil's advocate, all those. And to have like Goldblum's eyes gleam white, and then cat-faced female god in lotus position shows up and multiplies, and there are all the computer-generated gods all around, and then Satan is this, like, seething ball of red sperm. And, like, that's lovely. I mean, does it add up to much? No. Because then Goldblum just shoots him with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And that's, the power of the divine is all well and good, but
not good enough.
Let me
nothing
read you.
An old Smith
read to you from please read Colt 4:5.
Yeah, right.
Turn your Bibles to the Gospel of Smith and Wesson.
I mean, I like watching Jeff Goldblum around, but this was the one that was like I found a little convoluted and kind of this week. So this is my least favorite, I think.
Fair.
I don't know. You guys have other stuff you want to say before we wrap? Because I don't really have anything else to say on this one.
Soundtrack kicks ass.
Oh yes.
Love the soundtrack. It could have so easily turned into like a Power Man 5000 song many times. Except instead of that, it was like a children's chorus. So, super neat. Charlie, what else you got?
I was going to say, it's also important to point out that the production designer on this movie, his name is Michael Bolton.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching the credits at the beginning, and I was like, whoop, hold up, rewind. That might fall in the category of Charlie likes to find funny or weird setting names, and it's like, and that counts as a funny name because Michael Bolton is another guy, and so I thought that was great, so I had to write that down.
Yeah, why should he change? He's the one who sucks.
I really want to assume that it was the musician Michael Bolton who's just like, this is the downtime in between, the peaks of my career, so
I got bills.
So yeah, I thought that was important to point out. Otherwise, it's just sort of like, I don't think that anybody can ever run out of things like this to find, because there are a ton of these. You know, like there's, you know, Jacob's Ladder is a little more of a well-known, a little more of a serious-minded thing with Tim Robbins, but like pretty much any A-list type of person, you can go back in their filmography and find things like this.
Oh, at least one, yeah.
You know, that like, I mean, you know, as Clint Eastwood did with Jeff Bridges, did that movie Bloodwork. I really like that movie. It's a fun kind of police procedural kind of thriller thing. It's a kind of a horror bent a little bit here and there. Robert De Niro did Heart, the one set in Louisiana. The dog was barking Braveheart. Behind. No, it was the dog is barking behind me. And I can't keep a thought in my head. So it's the movie that De Niro did was the Heart, and then the Louisiana. And it's like that was way off the beaten path for De Niro. And so, like, you go back any of the A-list of people, and you can find all kinds of interesting stuff when it comes to that kind of thing. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like everybody, like, not everybody, I shouldn't say that. Most actors seem to have the idea that, like, you know, at first you take whatever parts you can get. And then you maybe find a couple good roles, and you get offered a certain kind of role. And then they usually kind of go, well, but I've never done this yet. And then they try to find, like, the good one of that they could do. But it's hard to tell from a script what the movie's going to turn out like. So, like, this might have sounded really dope on paper, and then just kind of was like, oh, well, the execution's not there. You know, like, I've always kind of liked that, where, like, people go, yeah, no, I get cast in comedies constantly, so I want to try drama. And then it's like, so someone finally offers them a drama movie, and they take it. And you're like, oh, God, no, why would you do that? You know, and I feel like this is definitely a category that happens in.
Well, all you have to do is read that. All you have to do is read that scene where they get into the car accident and they're going backwards down through a forest. And it's just like, once you read that, I mean, how can you not do the movie? I mean, really?
I like that if you pause that in the right frame, you can see the T-Rex.
Yep. It's closer than it appears.
Yeah.
Go faster. Let's go faster.
There was something really surprisingly weighty about the mom struggling to get Goldblum out of the car and like swimming with him and trying to keep his head above water. Like that had a lot more heft to it than anything else in this movie. Like,
oh, for
even
sure.
More than the murders at the beginning is just, God damn, yeah, that's rough.
Our setup in the beginning, like through the car accident part, is actually very intense. And then the movie just kind of loses that as it goes.
And the waking up and my husband's dead.
Like, yeah.
He's well, only mostly super sad. Dead.
Yeah. It's just like, liar, liar. they just Charlie, do a whole scene from, that? Just put a whole scene from Princess Bride in there.
No one will notice.
Take high. Yeah, I mean, this is dumb, but it's like, I couldn't say that I was bored. You know, I think it's entertaining. It's an entertaining movie. Then I'll probably watch again. Like, no bones about it. Like, I'll watch this silly thing again at some point or other. Like, oh, you haven't seen this until you've seen The Hideaway with Jeff Goldblum. So, you know, I mean, I was entertained for sure. It's a little dopey in all the mechanics of Sisto's character. I'm kind of on Josh's thing on that one. Like, he comes across more like Cuddly Bear and less like an actual serial killer. So it's, you know, it's a little bit, kind of a little up and back as far as that's concerned. It's also a little weird because they say that Alicia Silverstone's character is supposed to be 16, but they're like, also, we're going to have her kind of like rhythmically enjoying music in multiple scenes and like have the big makeup and all the thing. And it's like, all right, look, movie. I know she wasn't 16 when you filmed this, but I don't like that so much. So, but anyway, ups and downs.
Well, she lives in that town from Footloose.
It's just like... no, it didn't work. So yeah, I mean, I would watch this again. I was entertained, even though it's a bit dopey. So I will say, I know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say 6 out of 10, Alfred Molina's death face, because that's so super funny. He's just like, please forgive me.
Yeah. It took me till like the third scene he was in to realize that was Alfred Molina.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's such an old movie. That I'm just like, I feel like my real introduction to him was fucking Spider-Man 2. Hmm. And like, since then I've seen him in a bunch of things, but I was just like, oh my God, that is that guy young. Yeah, like I said, this is my least favorite this week. It's like I said, I love watching Goldblum around, and there's a couple interesting bits, but overall it was just sort of this kind of, this just felt to me like a soup missing a couple ingredients, and so everything was just sort of swirled around, but nothing made sense. So I'm gonna say for me this is a 4 out of 10. Alicia's being silver stone, brah. Nah, brah.
Yeah, I'll allow it.
Okay, yeah, brah.
Yeah, this to me was just a present, a gift, a gift from the past, like just wrapped in Jeff Goldblum paper. And Jess dug the shit out of it too. She
nice.
Was like, "This was actually really good. Like, how dare you show me a good movie?" And because occasionally she will talk about like,
"I need this for leverage later in the week."
It's like, I have to watch all these dumb movies. I watch so many bad movies, and like, you've watched tons of really good movies, and then I'll name like 10.
Mm-hmm.
She go, "Oh, that's right. We watched Final Girls and Turbo Kid and It Follows and The Witch."
I haven't watched Turbo Kid since we watched it. I need to watch that again.
Their new movie is out this fall.
Oh, really?
Summer of 84.
Yeah, Kanda and I are going to see it on Sunday.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm super excited for that. So, yeah, I had a whole lot of fun with this one. It was one of those, like, occasionally having fun because it's so dumb and occasionally having fun because it's kind of good in parts. So, this to me is a 7 out of 10. Ooh. Got Elton, could you suck? Where are we at, kids? Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with our last movie for the week.
Yeah,
sounds good.
Alright, finally we have Dark, Deadly, and Dreadful, or Oscuro Mortuoso y Muy Mal, or something or other. Dark, Deadly, and Dreadful. This is a collection of shorts from the good folks at Fun Size Horror,
mm-hmm.
who are lovely people that we are kind of big fans of just as human beings.
Yeah.
And have put out some really cool stuff. A couple of the ones in their Fun Size Shorts anthologies have been some of our favorite shorts
mm-hmm.
of all time. What was the one with the boogeyman who was coming for the stepfather? And then stepdaughter sells him out to
Boogeyman. Oh yeah, that one's good. That was a good
Mr.
one.
Mr. Something. Yeah.
Some of the
goodest stuff that we've seen in a bit. This is a weird little collection, right?
Oh, those two idiots. Remember, Josh? The two guys that are like, they're kind of the dueling guys, the Bill Clinton sort of guys, where they're like, "I'm gonna smack you in the head with the hammer." Like, okay, "I'm gonna smack you in the head with the hammer." Like, "I'm going to shoot you with an arrow."
Do you trust me?
Yeah, that one. That was one of theirs, too.
Oh, totally. Yeah, so they've done good stuff. This is a weird collection in that I don't really feel like it's a collection.
Like, thematically?
Yeah, because there's no theme that unites them. There are completely different lengths. And there's no wraparound, which is okay.
I'm usually fine with that. Although I also had trouble sometimes telling when one ended and the next one started. Because did they all have a title card? I felt like some didn't.
Some of them had it at the beginning, some at the end.
Yeah, and that was really strange. And so
it really played
that was a little
like,
disorienting.
It kind of played like an episode of our short film festival, you know?
I guess, you know.
Like
at least
just,
you have like credits, though, after. You know what they did, too, though, didn't they? Yeah, I suppose.
They did, so it was just like this.
So, I don't know.
It seems more like just, here's some stuff we've been working on.
Yeah.
Because one of them, Octopus Man, we did a couple years ago. So
yeah,
that's been
a while
around for a while.
Yeah.
So
no, I mean, I think it's just like it's a curated collection, and it's like any curated collection. It's a little all over the place. You know, mm-hmm. like any given night that we do at the horror festival, which we can tell because we have ballots handed in, people are all over the place on what they thought was good. And sometimes it's like a landslide in one direction. Sometimes it's like, which we like is if it's evenly spread out. Then
I like
everybody
if,
likes something. But
as long as everything gets at least one vote, then
yeah.
I feel like we did our jobs, or Charlie did his job because the rest
Charlie
of us
does have the heavy lifting there. Oh. But yeah, it is. This feels very much like one of the nights we would put together,
mm-hmm.
where you're just going to go, okay, we want this type of thing, this type of thing. We got these and whatever, and we're going to put these in front of an audience because we think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hit or miss proposition.
Yeah,
so there are definitely some misses in here, and there's definitely some hits in here.
Well, and I will tell you, the other perspective I had on this thing, I thought about reflecting on this one a little bit, is one of the worst experiences I ever had at any kind of festival, any kind, in terms of short stuff, was earlier this year at South by Southwest, because they did the Midnighters and they seemed to make a conscious decision to just pick as much outlandish, shocking, subversive, weird stuff as possible and just put it all together by and large. Whereas in years past, they had like really good content. It was like, that's where I saw Curve and Happy B-Day. Just so many fun things that they've programmed over the years. Just a lot of really great work, you know. And this last year, they were just like, nope, we're going to do this grating, subversive, kind of dissonant garbage and just put it into one little thing. And I have a couple in there that were okay, that were more like traditional Midnighter ones, which I guess I have to think that it was one of the other programmers that just sort of forced the issue. But otherwise, it was just, I've never come out of a block as like, mad ever. And so it's sort of like, I always kind of think with these type of things, when you get stuff together, and the Fun Size folks are no different. Like, those are the collections. There's a lot of stuff in there. And so I just figure, like, if you come out of it going, like, I liked a couple of these ones. I didn't like these other ones. It's kind of indifferent in this part of it. You know, overall, that was all right. That's pretty cool. Yeah, well, that was really good or whatever. Then it's like, you don't just come out and just, like, the term that I always try to keep in mind, and especially after South by this year, was just, like, disappointed. Like, I don't think you ever, if you're curating them, if you're the Fun Size people and you're bringing submissions in, you got your people, disappointment is the one thing you want to avoid. If somebody hates something, or they love it, or whatever, cool. That's great. But if somebody just comes out and goes, God, what a waste of my time. Like, then that's not so good. That's like pull Project of Evil.
You know? That is a concept that I've never crystallized in my brain that actually is very smart. You know, I like that. That's a good way to think of it.
I'm sorry, Paul Prodigy, guys. I'm sorry to pick on you, but
no, that works.
That was tough.
I think we ended up with something that was not a waste of time here for sure.
No, yeah. Not at all.
So I did take some notes, which is good because this doesn't have a Wikipedia entry.
Yeah, I depend on that so hard. Yeah.
So the first short is like a minute and a half long. Lady in a bathroom stall asks for lady on the other side asks for a tampon.
Ah.
Then there's just blood gushing from the next door stall, and then just creepy face peeks under the stall.
It's good and creepy.
I thought that was great.
I think it's good and creepy. Shorty. The logic of the woman that we're following, our protagonist, of going like, this seems fucked up. I won't stand up and leave. Like, you know, so you have to.
Maybe she was still had like a turtle head poking out, you know?
You know what? If it's pools of blood coming under the bathroom stall, I don't care if I'm mid piss and pooping. Nah. I'm getting up and running out and going into the lobby and being like, look! And they're going to be like, we don't want to. And I'm like, not at me, you assholes! In there! Like, so that was like, Megan and I kind of kept looking at each other like, when is she going to get up and run? Turns out never. Like it's all. Also, she tries to climb over the door, but there's nothing that infers that the door is locked.
No, I thought she checked the door and she couldn't get the lock.
Did
open.
She? Maybe. Yeah. Maybe I missed that because I think we were. And both you don't like, want to go under that. No, not at all. So yeah, that would make sense. But yeah, no. So it was. We enjoyed it, and like that monster's great and it's gross, but it was a little, yeah. But yeah, overall good.
You want to weigh in on that one, Charles?
Oh, great. I mean that would that's one of my 50-50 ones. Like, okay, take or leave it. Yeah, that's fine.
The second one was Takeout. We have the old folks picking up a hitchhiker.
Ah, yes.
And
I wonder if they might be bad guys. Like
this is that cat's game type thing.
I liked this, but it had a good energy. It had a good vibe. It was cheesy, but it was funny. But then the end when they just start cutting chunks off the dude is actually kind of gnarly. So I enjoyed it.
I mean, it's a little gross. But this is a little eye-rolly to me, I guess, just because it's, I think maybe this has been worn a little thin. You know, I mean, we just talked about another thing. We're like, oh, the bad guy is really the good guy, or the good guy is really the bad guy. Like, that was, you know, surgery. So, like, and I get it. There's still room for that trope, right? But, I don't know. Something in the execution of this didn't really grab me. And so we were kind of going, okay, here it comes. And then it does. And then it's the other thing too that I brought up when watching this is not all cannibals are required to be sadists. because it seems like in most cannibal things, they also want to like eat you alive.
Right.
I don't go up to a cow with a fork and just take hunks of meat. You know,
anymore.
Which is the cow, you prepare the meat, you do whatever, and they're just like, as they're shoving like hunks of intestine, parts you don't want to eat, really, yeah, into their mouths.
I thought
like,
it was just strips of skin.
I don't know. Part of it looks like liver and stuff. Like, I don't know. But the idea that like that so frequently happens, where the cannibal in the movie wants you to be alive and screaming while they eat it, so they can be like, hey, 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 hey. I don't want to stand in front of a cow and eat its heart and be like, hey, 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 hey.
Well, you should. Then you steal its power.
That's true. That's bison.
The power to graze.
The power to move.
To have an extra stomach.
But you know what I mean? Like that it occurred to me.
The power to moo, because
no,
that's...
The power to moo you. But that occurred to me for the first time in this, because I've just taken that as normal in cannibal movies, that they will totally just cut you up and start eating you alive so you freak out and scream, which is why it's put in the movie. But like they should just be butchering you like anybody else.
That is a point that Wrong Turn 2 got right.
I think so.
Where they're actually cooking.
Yep.
I thought that was fun. Charlie, where'd you land on that one?
This one is more of a down for me. I just sort of like, it's like when you give me three characters and it's a horror anthology, my first thought is like, well, the people that don't seem like bad guys are going to be the bad guys. I bet my pillows are on it. And it's just sort of like, yep, but that's what it turns out to be. So, I mean, I don't mind going on well-worn grooves, but you just gotta do a little more with it. You know, you gotta do a little more with it. And so, you know, it was okay, but it was just sort of like, it wasn't really my thing.
And this next one is Tampoon, which is the combination, I guess, of tampon and harpoon, where you have sentient tampon.
And that's when Josh got fired from his marketing job.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's also a floor wax.
Slices, dices, purees.
This reminded me by the end of it of like the shitty jokes we told when we were 12 years old.
Yeah, or like the worst parts of ABCs of Death.
Yeah, I was thinking of like the, and then she's like, stick your finger in there, and he stuck his finger, and she's like, stick your hand in there, and then they stick your whole arm, and then he's like, his whole body fell in there. And he's crawling around on his hands and knees, and a guy meets another guy, and he's like, hey, I'm looking for my keys, and then we can ride my motorcycle out of here. It's like, get it, because her twat's so big. Mm-hmm. It's like, that is comes from a place of people who have no understanding of women and find them a mystery and are freaked out by them. But then it looks like this was written and executed by a vagina-having human being. So I really don't know how to parse it, except I didn't like it. It just seemed...
Well, and the mechanics were better executed in Grim Fairy Tales, I suppose.
Yeah. And American Gods, for that matter.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
If you're going to shove people up your twat, you got better options than this one, I'm just saying. And also, if you're going to shove people up your twat, probably don't. In real life. Next one was The Listing, which was like the haunted house that had some cool... little stop motion effects and some things, but by the end of it, I had no idea what I had just watched.
Am I okay? So this is one that confused the shit out of me because
same.
Am I confused? So here's the thing: am I insane, or did we watch a version of this movie that wasn't the same as this one? We watched a version of this like 3 years ago, where like either they reshot something or they re-edited something or something. Or I'm just thinking of something entirely different. But I swear to God, we watched something that was called The Listing, where there's like weird shit going on. There's like a bucket and like a bathtub and some other crazy crap going on. And then like the lady shows up and then they're like excited about the house and stuff. But there's like all, we just watch all this ritualistic, weird sort of creepy things happening. And then like the lady shows up and then there's like one of the rooms has like a pentagram with like sticks.
I remember that.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, this
is
the thing
that
exists.
I do remember
that.
Wow, I remembered something, guys.
No.
No,
well,
for sure.
Done.
I do.
Josh, give him a sardine.
Yeah, give me one of those nerds chewy things. We've got dog treats.
Oh.
Don't try to throw us it, because I won't catch it. I'm not a dog. I only got two.
Yeah, there was the one with the realtor lady who's, like, cleaning blood off the floor.
Yeah. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, this is not that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is the same bones as that.
I didn't understand what happened.
Megan and I spent a good chunk
going... It was a little too long for me to not understand.
Yeah, wait, is this guy a realtor? No. Why would you be... You wouldn't be trying to show a house that looks like this.
Mm.
You also shouldn't be surprised it looks like this. You should have been there when you got the listing to figure it out and get it all cleaned up or whatever you're going to do. And then you're like, but no, he doesn't... What's going on? And then,
he's attacked by the guy in the chipmunk suit.
The weird poop monster mouse guy. And then...
It's Mr. Poop Monster Mouse Guy.
And this is the one where he gets drawn into the
I
tub,
go by
right?
Chet.
Mm. Right? Okay, so then he gets sucked into the tub somehow. And then cut to sometime later that day? That a family shows up and goes, wow, this house is full of debris and garbage and stuff, and our realtor's not here. Go pick your bedrooms, girls! And I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, they're just like, we live here now.
What is even?
But the bulk of the thing is, like, little dolls being, like, picked up and moved around by an unseen force. And this is like, I don't know, it's all atmosphere, it's all hat and no cattle.
I
didn't quite get it.
And, you know, not to be cruel, but I could not really follow what was going on for hunks of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I might just be an idiot, but like I said, we just were like, I don't get where we're supposed to be thinking of this. And then the logic of it, once we kind of found out retrospectively what we were supposed to have been seeing, I was like, I don't think that tracks. And then, fine with weird little rat poop monster guy. I'm fine with getting sucked into a gross tub of water. Like, that's disgusting. But like some of it is just kind of like broke my brain a little bit with the logic. So this is a down for me.
Yeah, I mean, this is just kind of like, I didn't really understand. Mm-hmm. Partly because I was confused because I thought it was another one.
Right.
Yeah.
So there was Silent Scream, which is the lady living in an apartment building that only one other person lives in, but she's hearing sounds at night that sound like somebody's being murdered. And come to find out, she's nuts because her music teacher molested her, so she's going to kill other lady with a flute.
Yeah, this is what I refer to as serious unresolved woodwind issues. and also, too, she uses the flute as a murder weapon. And if you are familiar with the Mission Impossible franchise of films, in the last one, Rogue Nation or whatever else, one of the characters uses a flute and has a custom-made gun inside of the flute. And they use a flute as a murder weapon there, too. And it's like, man, there's some people with some latent flute issues you walk around. And it's like, sheesh, flute ordered you.
Yeah, I would agree with someone using a flute as a gun or maybe like a poison dart shooter. A stabbing instrument, it is not. I mean, my mom and my sister...
I mean, anything is if you're...
brave enough?
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom and my sister both played flute. They are a very blunt object. She seems to have no problem driving through a chest cavity of somebody. So I was like, that's... She's not going to stab her with that. Yep, she is. Yes, she is. That's okay. And whatever. Like, it's not the end of the world, but...
I mean, and this, before the end of it, which I think falls kind of flat.
Yeah, I think so too.
It does have some neat stuff going on.
The creepiness of her thinking shit's going on is awesome.
The cinematography in this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's a really cool lighting effects and colors.
I also would be curious where they found this place.
Because,
it's a really, this is an atmospheric hallway. And it's hard to find a hallway that is atmospheric. You've walked through the hallway of my apartment building a million times. You could not light that to make it look interesting.
Right.
But theirs looks really good.
And there are times when she can hear the soundtrack, where it's ominous and horror-like, and she kind of goes, "Buh." And it's like, oh, that's neat.
Was that the case? Because we were arguing about that. It's like, did it become diegetic sometimes and then sometimes not? Because I was like, is she supposed to be hearing that music right now?
She really was reacting.
But then
they
didn't show you a radio, and I was like, or is she hearing something and we're getting the rising music to indicate that same level? And we were just like... fascinated by that. I would love to find out what the intent was there, because I'm fine with either, but it was really just made me kind of sit back.
Like, in her mind, since all this is happening in her mind, when something ominous starts happening, she starts hearing horror movie soundtrack.
That's a really kind of cool idea.
It's a cool idea. Yeah, I like that. This was one of a couple that was really well put together and had some really interesting ideas and then didn't quite land for me. So what do you think of this one, Charles?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same boat. The other thing that I found impressive was, because of the stylistic choices of the it was lit and shot, they had this very attractive woman in basically like a nightgown or whatever the word for that is. But I don't feel like it gets really leery at all, or it gets where you get caught up oh man, she's really, she's a very pretty lady and all this kind of stuff. It's more just sort of you know, I don't know. You just get, that doesn't even become a factor. Like, it didn't occur to me until later. Like, it's like, oh, she's really a pretty actress. And it was like, I didn't, like,
we brought
it didn't occur
up.
To me once, one yeah. time, you know? And that's an art, boy. Like, that is an art. You know,
well, like, we brought that up watching it as I was like, who the fuck wears a nightgown anymore? And Megan's like, I think there are women that do. They still sell them at Target. That means they must sell enough to make it worth carrying them. But you're right, Charlie. Like, any other movie, it would be, you know, bra and underwear. And it'd be more revealing or something. But, like, this one's just like, no, she just kind of is sleeping what's comfortable.
Mm. Yeah, it's not a priority in the way that
no,
they're viewing her.
No, at no point is that
her.
Plot relevant.
I thought yeah. that was interesting just because it's sort of like, I just, you get very attuned to that not being, or that being the thing. And
yep.
it's interesting when it's not. I'm kind of with Josh on the idea that I think, you know, maybe a few more goes at the end, you know, wraps up a little tighter, but there's some interesting things going on for sure. And, I admire them essentially having one actress kind of doing a lot of flailing around in one location and
yeah,
not having it be dopey in the sense of like some idiot with a camcorder. Like, it doesn't feel that way. It feels more cinematic, which is very impressive to do. So mm-hmm. I kind of hats off on that one.
Yeah, she deserves credit for holding it down for almost the entirety of this thing by herself.
That's, yeah, for sure.
Having nothing to act off of is, that's tough, man.
Speaking of which, our next one, Who's Afraid of the Octopus Man?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Features just a guy and a stuffed octopus
mm-hmm.
for most of it. This was one we watched maybe a year ago. I actually just re-listened to the episode where we talked about it.
Oh,
weirdly. Yeah. And it, like, all I remembered from it was that I thought the end was kind of dumb because it was he like cuts off his own hand out of remorse for having killed his brother and there was no Octopus Man the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was like, you don't name your short Who's Afraid of the Octopus Man and then not give me an Octopus Man of any kind. But watching it again, knowing that the ending is disappointing, I could focus on how good the rest of it is. And it is really damn solid. It's just, you know, it kind of womps at the end.
I mean,
the only thing that I could remember from that episode was just, I think the little octopus hands were kind of like, well, why wouldn't there be like an actual tentacle and not just sort of flinging the fingers? That's the only thing I really remember.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Before.
And it's, yeah, it's got a couple of things like that are a little like, but the actual tension that they're creating through the early part, I think, works. Because I'd forgotten we'd watched this, because I forgot what I had for lunch yesterday. But I thought this did a good job of building tension, and then you kind of get to the point where you can sort of go, oh, whoa, they ripped off little octopusy guy's arm. Oh, that doesn't bode well.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, like, they're doing a good job of kind of drawing you into what's probably going to happen, but then, like, the reveal is a little different than what I expected, at least. Mm. Again, having seen it before and still not remembering it, I still didn't know what to expect. So it's... It's you know, I mean, it's better than anything I could do, but doesn't quite land, like you said. And you know, as we've said many times, endings are the hardest goddamn part of anything. Mm-hmm. You know, a satisfying ending to something people like is brutally difficult. So, like, yeah, I can forgive them that and say, like, I like this. It's just, yeah, there needs to be one more little, like, oomph moment that kind of like gets you there, you know.
I would have just preferred it to have been him actually confronting a monster that killed his brother instead of, you know, him and the tide being the monster.
Yeah.
But the whole like hanging out talking to the stuffed octopus is done so goddamn well.
Yeah.
What did you how'd you feel about this, Charlie? Did we say?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting kind of a thing. And Josh, you put it on something that I think is very important with this kind of stuff is once you've watched something, to then be able to see it again, but then see it not with different eyes, but just you can focus on different stuff, you know, which I think is kind of an important sort of thing, especially with short form things. Like, they're not very long, hence the name, and so you can go back and watch stuff again and be like, oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's kind of a clever thing. They do a thing with that stuffed animal, by the way. I don't know if this hit you all, but. You see the little octopus guy sitting on the arm of the chair. And then you see the little octopus guy sitting over here. And then he's up on the mantle, but his, like, legs are sticking. He's, like, up on his legs. And it's, like, it was weird. Because it was, like, I didn't think he had, like, legs that make him stand up. I just figured he was just kind of floppy legs. You know, like, kind of beanie baby sort of skeletal structure. And I was just, like, no, he's standing up.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, that's kind of cool. So there's just little things like that that were kind of interesting thing. And yeah, I fully would like him to be taking on like a Day of the Tentacle type of a monster versus like a guy with funny fingers, which happens to be himself.
Right? The Octopus Man was inside us the whole time.
Yeah.
And we were out in the octopus's garden. So Unit 731 is hitting a story that I don't think is told enough.
Right.
Which is the Japanese did some really horrific shit to the Chinese during World War II, kind of the same way that the Nazis did to fucking everybody who wasn't a Nazi. So, that's an interesting place to start.
The movie Men Behind the Sun kind of gives you the version of this that gets more in depth.
Mm.
I feel like this one goes as far as you can in a very short thing.
Right.
And honestly, and like, while it's not, I didn't love it, the fact that they're addressing that, which is a little lost bit of history, like you said, just kind of made me appreciate its existence. Cause like, I think that's important. And that's a subject that I've been fascinated by going back, because it's just, there's this whole other aspect to things that people kind of just, they're just forgotten victims.
Well, in your all's opinion, are they suggesting that the things that they're doing to these patient subject type people, that the things that are occurring, that they're seeing and the visions and all over else, are they suggesting that is happening because of the weird drugs they're putting them on, or are they introducing a supernatural element?
I thought the whole everything that was happening was a byproduct of the Japanese doctor having gone insane.
Okay.
And just being overwhelmed by guilt. Yeah. And then the fact that he doesn't want to be drugged to go to sleep is because if he's drugged, he can only have dreams, and his dreams are always bad. Because he seems tentative when they first start the process. Mm-hmm. He still does it, which makes him a monster. And so the fact that he then probably... And again, that was the part that I was a little about, is are we meant to sympathize with him at all? Because to me, that's just an absolute no. You can't sympathize with that person. And I would be curious to see like if the folks that made this had an idea of where they were going with this. Because I'm sure there were people that were pressured into doing horrible things on different sides of almost any war. But they still did them. And I get it. I've never been put in the position of do this where we shoot you. But I don't know, man. Like... there's a point where you're just hacking babies out of women that I'd be like, I don't think I can do that. I got to say no, no matter the consequence.
It's the seven thing where like, and he made me put on the razor dick and have sex with the lady. And like, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He threatened you for doing that. But like at some point, I don't know. And it's an impossible question for me to ask because I've never had that kind of a situation pop up.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know. So it's very easy when watching a movie to be like, and that's the other difficult thing about doing things based on history. Whoa, man, everybody was in a basically impossible situation at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to come off as flippant when I talk about this.
But it seems
it's a little upsetting to me if he's supposed to be somewhat sympathetic.
I don't think so. I think he's not quite a true believer. And then he gets the like for the good of the motherland speech kind of thing and goes for it. So the way that this story is told is from the perspective of a young Chinese girl who is the object of the torture.
Yep.
And is having this disjointed thing where people are telling her she's got to remember who she is and what's going on. And it turns out that she is actually the doctor remembering the things that he did.
Projecting.
But projecting himself into the point of view of the victim. So... And they do a good job of implying those horrors without putting them on screen, which I think is good. Because in this case, it would be gratuitous. You know, like in one scene, she's got a hole cut in her dress around her stomach and like a dotted line across her stomach.
Yeah.
Which we know what that means. You know, there's a pregnant lady who's then got blood, you know, coming out of her wherever, to quote our president. Ugh. There's somebody who's just got like skin missing from the elbow down on their arm. Yeah. So, but you never see him do the things, which I think is a stronger choice.
It's especially for a short.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
this is stylish as hell. It's really nicely put together. It's another one where I don't feel like it quite landed, but it's pretty damn good.
I think this is worth watching just because you might not have heard of this much or at all.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this is not even remotely how horrible things were. Like, it's really scary how much this stuff happened here. So, like, the idea that this would raise some awareness, I think, is... I'm glad someone tried to tackle the subject with a non-gratuitous, like you said, a non-gratuitous mm-hmm. approach. Because, yeah, I think
which, and I was trying to remember back, and I can't remember. Which was the anthology that we watched that had... It was a little below average, but then my favorite one out of the one was the one with the deer, and I remember we were talking about how it really doesn't
the deer
jive.
In the gymnasium.
No, the one where like the guy hits the deer and then they kind of kill the deer, and it's like this, you know.
Yeah, that was Teatro Bizarro or whatever.
Yeah, that's the one, and so like some of them are kind of humorous and some of them are kind of outlandish, or whatever, and then there's this very somber. Like serious rumination on like mortality that I really loved. I thought it was really great, but it really doesn't jive with the rest of them. And like this one kind of almost falls out of category a little bit in my mind, where it's like it's very serious minded and very well put together. The cast is good, all that kind of stuff. And it's like it just doesn't 100% feel like it jives with everything else. And I don't think it's its fault. I think it's just more serious in general. And it's just sort of like,
Yeah. This is a good little think piece. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting deal.
Maybe that's why I wasn't 100% sold on it, is it's in the same anthology as Tampoon.
Yes, no. Exactly.
It's hard to know what to make
of that.
It's a
little
that,
all over the place,
know?
Yeah.
So then, the final two, we can talk very briefly about Ouija, because apparently we can't talk about it super much. It's people doing a Ouija board, and the spirit that answers the Ouija board is a bad speller, and so they make fun of
and they're all
the
pedants.
Spirit.
Yeah,
and the
on pain
and then
of
the
death,
spirit,
they
know,
can't
then,
stop correcting.
You know, like lights up, and you're dead. YOUR on the wall in blood, and someone comes up and like, yeah, it's so gross, but I gotta add the apostrophe and the e, and it's like this. Maybe because it's me,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it. It's the same joke like five times, and that's and to me that was fine.
To me, it just
kept getting funnier.
It
to
was
me.
Laying
it was Silent
in,
Bob stepping on the rakes. You know,
yeah, it's laying
Silent
into
Bob,
the
Sideshow Bob.
Sideshow Bob. That'd be, although either'd be good,
right?
No, this is laying into internet pedants, pedantic Eric, to the extent that they do, where like every little thing has to be nitpicked, and. It is one joke, just driven to the point of absurdity. I laughed my ass off the whole time.
Yeah.
I can understand why someone like, I don't know, maybe Charlie didn't like it. Charlie, tell us about it.
I just, yeah, we had the exact opposite experience with this short. I was cross. I can recognize the first pass at one version of the joke as being funny. And then I just kind of was like, I wrote in gigantic letters in my notes, like, I get the joke already. Stop doing it. Just stop. 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 And it's like, it reminds me of like 24-year-old actors in LA that will go write a screenplay about an actor. And it's like, I get it. You know how to use punctuation and you studied real hard when you're in college. And like, this is just not funny. And it's just sort of like, it's just boring. And it's just sort of like, it reminds me of Dane Cook a little bit. How like, he will do a setup for a joke and interrupt his setup to explain to you that he's setting something up and being like, here's this thing right here. This is the hook line. Oh, here's the punchline coming. This is the punchline. We're going to go back to the punchline now. And it's like in that kind of very much like smirking kind of Drakkar Noir sort of like as a person kind of way. And it's just like, this just feels like that. It's like, stop being Dane Cook. Like, just, you know, be better.
I didn't get any scent of bro-ishness off of this or anything.
Oh, I thought the whole thing was. The whole thing was just a bunch of snarky hipster dipshits sitting around smirking at each other until one of them, their head blows up, hopefully. And it's just sort of like, and I just, like, I can't abide that. I guess I've gotten too old. I can't abide it. Yeah, I don't think it's funny. I don't think it's clever.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that. Because to me, this is me and Matt sitting around going, wouldn't it be funny if there was a ghost who was a bad speller and then
And then two assholes people doing like the Ouija boards came in and did it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel like this seems
that would be funny. Let's get like
it's either I would TJ assume this Kudalis is either self-reflective of people that are actually like that. They're going, yeah, we're dicks. Or people that know a bunch of people like that wanting to show how stupid it is because these people are literally dying for punctuation.
Yeah.
Like, that's the road I went on. Yeah, I didn't see, I don't know. We'll have to talk to him if we can, but...
I didn't see the snarky, but I know when something rubs you that way, then there's just no coming back from that, for sure.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the one with the witches cursing each other. And, one of the fun size horrors, and they can only do curses that kind of sound like thinner. So they're like, wizard, you know, I thought it was fucking hilarious, but it is just that single joke stretched to 5 minutes.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, and I guess my other thing too is that like, if you're going to do like a horror story, if you're going to make a comedy thing and it's going to be a horror thing, okay, fine. But like, if it's supposed to be like a horror setup or whatever else, like, see, this is the thing. This is why I was just bum-fuzzled that you both like this. Because, like, on top of just, like, the 25-year-old hipster in a coffee shop humor level, which bugged me, there was also the thing of, like, it kind of feels like it's making fun of horror stuff, too. Like, it's just sort of like, it's like, there could be a potential monster, threat, demon, anything. Fucking run! What are you doing? Like, your obsession with punctuation can't be that fucking important. Like, I don't think that's funny, and it's like, it almost seems like it's making fun of horror stuff. It's just sort of like, oh, isn't that trope where, like, you know, people are just going to, like, stay in for the entire exorcism? What if they did it because it was, like, they're obsessed with punctuation? And this is sort of like, no.
Don't you think you could just... I feel like, though, you could plunk a scene in the middle of Hellbaby and it would fit perfectly.
No, because the Hellbaby people actually like what they're writing about. I don't think these people do.
I didn't pick up on that at all.
I didn't get that vibe.
I'm not saying you're wrong because we don't know, but I didn't get that vibe. This feels to me like just that broadly silly.
I thought this was
like,
gleeful. Yeah,
like Rob Corddry going, "I'm so tired of being startled."
That's still one of my favorite lines in a movie.
But that is done though. That scene, I love that scene, in a scene that's beautifully lit and kind of creepy. Like it's the way it's lit and the way it's set up is like it kind of goes, "Huh, shit." Like it's a little unsettling. You know, and it's sort of like, it's the same thing as Leslie Mann doing that line about, you know, like, oh, pregnancy brain. Like, it's funny, but also creepy. Like, there isn't anything creepy in this. I just get snark. That's all I get. And I've gotten too grumpy and old to just abide it. And I'm just really, really baffled that you guys didn't get that sense at all. It's really weird to me. Because I after this one, I didn't even watch the last one for about another hour because I just felt like, nope. You, I'm just sort of like, and it's just one of those things that every once in a while we all have this problem where like something will rub you the wrong way. Totally not their intention, I'm sure. But like, you know, I'm sure they're not just like awful people. Like we're going to piss off a certain segment of the population. Let's go. Like that can't be their motivation. Of course, like that's silly. But it's just like everyone, all three of us at some point or other, just like they'll have that thing that's just, you know, it's. Well, it makes me think of that thing for Richard Pryor, the Richard Pryor stand-up thing where he's talking about the monkey trying to have sex with his ear. Like, it's just like that's not the way this is supposed to work. Like, no part of this is correct. And this is sort of like, you know, clearly I'm the one in the minority, but it's still that's what it feels like.
At least we can all agree that the last one is probably the best one in this thing.
Absolutely.
I would say definitely the best one in this thing, The Cleansing Hour.
Yeah.
Do you have a streaming web show where Pastor or Father Lance does a different exorcism each week, and he's
one of the leads from the show Parenthood, which I love so much.
Oh,
it's super weird to watch him play a cad because he's really good at it. I mean, like, oh shit, he's a professional actor, duh. But it's like I'm used to him playing this very empathetic, very warm, very cool character, and in this one, it's just like, God, he's such a shitheel.
So people believe that the show is is real
and a weekly exorcism.
Yeah, like every week you find someone to save, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, it's amazing. And it's this religious experience for all these people. It's this can't miss thing.
Which is a great setup for a guy who's just like rooking people for money. He's just like, these idiots are so dumb. They'll believe I found a different person every week. Like this is absurd on its face and it's working.
I do like that they start you with the actress coming in and sitting down, where we don't know anything about what's going on and what she's going to be asked to do.
Right.
And the actress, by the way, is Heather Morris from Glee.
Yeah.
And I thought it was funny. I was like, that kind of looks like the deer in headlights lady from Glee. Oh, totally is. Hmm. Well, all right. And, of course, this is the time when an actual demon comes into play, brought in by substitute boom mic guy, who infects her while pretending to mic her, right? And demon just proceeds to rip the shit out of everyone on set while people watching at home are gobbling it up.
Like 15 million people or something like that, a huge amount.
And then at the end we find out girl has been exorcised, but demon is now in everybody who has watched a thing. You get a nice little murderous.
But how great is it that they don't explain it, right? They're like, okay, the demon becomes viral, and nobody says like, oh shit, the demon's become viral. Because they don't have to, because that would be dumb. It's so great that they don't. You just get these kind of awful, ominous sequences at the end there. But even leading up to it, like the whole dynamic between the actress being like, oh, do you want me to moan more? Do you want me to moan? Like, how can I do this, that, whatever else? And like, and how much of a cad the fella is and all those little things. Like, all that stuff is super cool. Like, it's just, like, I don't know, there's a lot going on there that I think is kind of an interesting. Interesting thing. I think the whole thing is super fun to watch.
I really enjoyed that one. It's rock solid.
Yeah, that one is just super fun start to finish.
Oh, she's also in another horror movie, by the way. It came out, I think, last year called Most Likely to Die.
Isn't any good?
I had it on our list a few weeks ago, but there's a bunch of idiots in the house and people get killed.
It's most horror movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, no, I thought this one is just, this felt also like it had the most traditional, like, narrative setup of just a horror movie of, like, start with something innocent, move to something poopy, and then go to, like, oh, shit, world ending. Like, because they basically just start the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. Like, what a great way to go from a small scam in an attic to world-threatening thing.
Yeah, it's like,
what, 10 minutes?
Awesome. The elements of the happening just must have been like, God damn it, why don't we fuck around with a bunch of ferns? Like, this is messing the internet, you know?
Yep.
Peace.
I liked it. The menace of her, like, getting genuinely frightening over the course of it.
Oh, yeah. Because
it's kind of funny to begin with, and then you're like, oh, shit. Oh, well, you know, it's a standard exorcism. So, like, no, oh, that's that's not okay.
It's real good.
And then you get the lovely, like, dead-eyed cop turning to his partner and just blowing his brains out.
Yep.
And absolutely not telegraphed at all. Just, ugh. So, yeah, did genuinely shocking and chilling stuff going on in that one. Loved it. So, for me, like, wrapping on this, I really, really liked that one and Ouija and the cannibals at the beginning. I was impressed by 731, even though it's not perfect. And then, like, Octopus Man and Scream and the listing was like, okay, well made, but I don't get it. The first thing with the toilet was fun, but super short, and then Tampoon was awful. So, like, on balance, this is actually batting pretty good for me for a compilation like this. So, I would hit it at, I would say, 6.5 out of 10. Pull the string and see what happens.
Yeah. I would say, you know, I mean, obviously we gave our little up downs on all the different segments, so you know which ones I liked or didn't, to varying degrees. But I think this is, you know, like any anthology, it's a little mixed, but strong enough that it's up there and better than a lot of the ones we've watched. So yeah, I enjoyed this. I feel like these folks do a good job of trying to, like, go out there and find some interesting stuff. So yeah, I'm gonna go just slightly higher. I'm gonna go 7 out of 10. Crap, no, I just can't remember anything. 7 out of 10, internet demons.
They get banned from Twitter, banned from Twitter for a week. yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit lower on the overall, but I mean, I do have a lot of, I mean, I just, at their core, I think the fun side is to horror people, you know, take this stuff seriously. And like we were saying before, like, they provide this interesting channel way by which people can get stuff in front of folks, like, much more so than any other kind of outlet. It's kind of remarkable in a lot of ways how they produce stuff, and then they have just submissions and things, and I don't know, it's very interesting. I find that very admirable, and so, you know, taking that into account, it's sort of like, you kind of bump it up a little bit. Overall, I wasn't super into a lot of the ones, as far as that part of it goes, but there's clearly just people trying things, which, on the overall, that feels like the most important part of it for sure. So, I'll bump it up a little bit and just be Switzerland and say 5 out of 10, and say 5 out of 10, the shot, how much would I pay to see the next shot of a girl in a sorority house after she put a bunch of heavy shit in that pillowcase?
Oh yeah.
Oh, out of 10. That was so good. Yeah. I love that.
Cause you're seeing that shot from like leg up. And you get the pillowcase as she's putting, like, she gets the heavy stuff she's putting in there. You're like, I want that next scene so bad. Mm-hmm. Oh, out of 10.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with movies for next week. Clip. So next week we are going to do a little sequel week inspired by the fact that Puppet Master : Littlest Reich is now available on video on demand, and from what I've read, seems to be kind of a reboot of the franchise. I've been reading very gory, maybe lacking some of the charm of the original, but yeah, we'll see. Thomas Lennon's in it.
Oh wow!
So
there's some other people.
When has he ever been in a bad movie? Never mind.
Oh, you'd be nice to poor Tom Lennon. Jeez.
No, he's also been in
poor rich Tom Lennon.
Is he rich or is he like the Bobcat Goldthwait? Like scraping together money to make a movie.
They wrote a book called How to Write Screenplays and Make $1 billion in Hollywood.
But did they?
I mean, the movies did.
Did they actually read the book? and follow its instructions. So Puppet Master, Littlest Reich, we'll give it a shot. Barbara Crampton's in it, so there's going to be at least two things worth watching about it. Thomas Lennon, Barbara Crampton. And Leprechaun 2, because we did the first Leprechaun, and boy howdy, there's so many in that series.
I'm into it.
Yeah, and then just for sheer bizarreness, When a Stranger Calls Back, the TV movie that continues that saga, 15 years later?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the same leads?
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's Carol astounding. Kane, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we're going to watch all those, Puppet Master, Littlest Reich, Leprechaun 2, Stranger, When a Stranger Calls Back. And our short is called Peep Hole. Not people, but Peep Hole.
Oh.
Yeah. Paul. Oh, no, Paul, yes, a werewolf.
That's a sweet peephole you might be thinking. Wrong.
People who need peepholes are the luckiest peepholes in the world. Okay, so we're going to watch those things, and you should watch them too. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I'll say bye.
As far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Dunn in Austin. If you want some bonus, we have some bonus points for this week for sequels. Let's try that again in English. Both Stepfather 2 and Stepfather 3 are both on Prime, Amazon Prime. Stepfather 2 stays with the same primary cast. Stepfather 3 has, like, there's a through line of a wood chipper teased throughout the entire thing. There's plastic surgery. There's a scene where the stepfather berates the kid in a wheelchair because he can't catch a football. It is chock full of stuff. And so if you want some extra bonus points this week, Stepfather 2, Stepfather 3, I think they're worth your time. I don't think that they're necessarily good, but I also have a copy of Stepfather 2 on VHS and I've had it for a while. So maybe I'm the only one assigning these bonus points, but just FYI. Also take care. Have a good week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And we'll talk to you later. Bye bye.